28. Within the meaning. Hi, Wojtek. When is Nagemi going to visit Baranov? I need to talk with Baranov. Send. She uncables the printer from Damien's cube, cables it to her iBook, hoping she has the right driver. She does. She watches the T-shaped city emerge in inkjet on a sheet of glossy. She'll need this, she thinks, without wanting to know exactly why. Checking her mail. Timing out, empty. Sleep no longer an issue. She looks at the printout, the squares and avenues, the overlay of numbers. Checking her mail. 1. Casey, he is going this morning, train from Waterloo to Bournemouth, 8:10. He is spelled Ngemi, N-G-E-M-I. His friend there loans him a car to drive to Baranov. Why are you awake now, Wojtek? Time in the upper right corner of her screen, 4:33. Why are you awake yourself? Can you get in touch with Ngemi and ask if I can go with him? I can't explain, but it's very important. His almost instant reply, I am working on ZX81 project. He wakes early. I will call him, call you. She sends him thanks and the number of the Blue Ant cell. Showers. Does not think. The train from Camden High Street reaches Waterloo at 7:15. Ancient escalators carry her to the concourse, beneath a few pigeons and a four-faced Victorian clock, above scheduled boards and travellers wheeling black ballistic nylon toward the tunnel trains. Off to Belgium, perhaps. Bijan land. She has been told to meet Ngemi beneath this clock, but is early, so she buys a tabloid, a bacon sandwich locked in rigid plastic and a Fanta. Coffee contraindicated now, as she hopes to nap on the train. Stands chewing her sandwich beneath the clock while the Sunday morning station moves around her. Vast, incomprehensible voices chant and gargle above the crowd, as if trying to push crucial information through the dusty tin of 100-year-old gramophone speakers. The Fanta has a nasty synthetic edge. She wonders why she bought it. The tabloid doesn't go down any better, seemingly composed in equal measure of shame and rage, as though some inflamed national subtext were being ritually, painfully massaged for whatever temporary and paradoxical relief this might afford. She bends both as she sees Ngemi approaching, large and black, zipped into his tight black jacket and carrying a sort of carpet bag in some African-looking handweave. Good morning, he says, looking mildly puzzled. Wojtek tells me that you wish to visit Baranov. I do. May I go with you? It is a peculiar request. He is not a man whose personality can be said to improve. All of his moods are unpleasant. Have you purchased a ticket?
Not yet.
Come with me, then.
2 hours to Bournemouth, according to Ngemi, though previously he explains it had been a quicker journey, the high-speed train running now on aging, unreplaced rails. She finds him a surprisingly comforting presence with his creaking leather and professional gravitas. Last night you said that Baranov had been bidding on an auction and had lost and wouldn't be happy, she opens, as a man in a polyester blazer pushes a cart of very Mirror World morning snacks past them down the aisle. Crustless white egg salad sandwiches in rigid triangular packaging, cans of lager, miniatures of whiskey and vodka.
Indeed, says Ngemi. He would be angry enough to have lost that calculator to anyone, but he has lost it to Lucian Greenaway of Bond Street.
Who is?
The dealer, most recently exclusively of clocks, and much resented by collectors in that field. Last year he began to go after Curtis. The market is not yet entirely rationalized, you see.
Rationalized?
Not yet established as a global specialist environment, as has long been the case, for instance, with rare stamps or coins, or, to almost that degree, with the clocks Greenaway deals in. Values are only just being established for Curt calculators. One still finds the odd example gathering dust on a shelf, perhaps for relatively little. All such markets are being rationalized by the Internet, of course.
Are they?
Absolutely. Hobbs himself.
And Case has to struggle for a second before remembering that this is Baranov's given name.
Is responsible for that to some degree.
How?
eBay, says Ngemi. He's very adroit there, and has sold many Curtis to Americans,
always for more than they would fetch here. Global values are being established.
Do you like them, the way he does?
Ngemi sighs, his jacket creaking sharply.
I appreciate them, I enjoy them, but not to the depth of Hobbes's passion. I love the history of computing, you see, and the Curta is simply a step for me, a fascinating one, but I have Hewlett-Packards that I enjoy as much or more.
He glances out at featureless fields, the dark spire of a distant church.
Hobbes, he says, turning back to her, suffers and enjoys as only the specialist can. I imagine it is not so much about the artifact in his case as about the ultimate provenance.
How's that?
The camps. Hetch Stark in Buchenwald, surrounded by death, by methodical erasure, by an almost certain fate. He continued to work. In the end, the camp was liberated. He walked free, never having abandoned his vision of the calculator. Hobbes honors that triumph, that escape.
He has something he needs to escape himself?
Himself, exactly.
He nods, then changes the subject.
What is it that you do? I didn't understand it in the restaurant.
I'm in marketing.
You sell things?
No, I find things, or styles, for other people, companies, to market. And I evaluate logos, trademark emblems.
You are American?
Yes.
I think it must be a difficult time to be American,
Ngemi says, settling his large head firmly back against the headrest of his non-reclining second-class seat.
If you don't mind, I will sleep now.
I don't mind. He closes his eyes. She looks out at the patchwork fields, sunlight flashing from the occasional puddle. When had she last ridden on a train, not a subway, through open country? She can't remember. Instead, she remembers her first view of Ground Zero, in late February. The viewing platforms, the unnaturalness of so much sunlight in that place. They had been pulling out a path train buried there. She closes her eyes. In Bournemouth, Ngemi leads her several blocks from the station, through the oddness, for her, of any England not London, to a greengrocer's shop. Here he is greeted by an older, very earnest-looking man, lighter-skinned, with neat grey hair and a fine-bladed Ethiopian nose. The greengrocer, evidently from his spotless blue apron, who looks to Case like a Tory Rastafarian. Ngemi and this man exchange extended greetings, or perhaps news, in what might, for all she knows, be Aramaic, or some utterly impenetrable dialect of English. Ngemi does not introduce her. The man gives Ngemi a set of car keys and a plastic bag containing plums and two ripe bananas. Ngemi nods gravely. She assumes in thanks, and she follows him along the street, to where he stops and unlocks the passenger door of a dark red Mirror World car. This one, she notes, is a Vauxhall, but nothing like the car she'd seen Hobbes drive in Portobello. It's scented inside with some alien air freshener, more African than Mirror World. Ngemi sits behind the wheel for a moment, then inserts the key. Very shortly, they're negotiating complex roundabouts at speeds that have Case closing her eyes. Finally, she opts to keep them shut. When she opens them, she sees rolling green hills. Ngemi drives on, silently, giving great concentration to the task. She sees a ruined castle on a hill.
Norman, Ngemi says, glancing over at her, but doesn't choose to elaborate.
Without waiting for the fruit to be offered, she removes a banana from the greengrocer's bag and peels and eats it. Cloudy now, and a light drizzle settles in. Ngemi turns on the wipers.
I'd offer you lunch before we see Hobbes, Ngemi says, but timing when visiting him can be crucial.
We can phone him to make sure he'll be in.
He has no phone. I was able to reach him at his local last night. He was drunk, of course. He should be awake by the time we arrive, and I hope that he won't have started again.
20 minutes later, he exits from the main road, following what Case thinks of as two-lane blacktop. They are in countryside of a vaguely agricultural sort, sheep on a hillside. Soon they are climbing single-lane gravel around the side of a hill. As they round it, Case sees, below them, a curiously desolate-looking complex of buildings of various sizes, all of brick, no visible activity. Descending the Vauxhall's tires crunching gravel, she sees chain link and barbed wire.
It is a former training facility, he says. MI5 or MI6, I think 5. Now they breed and train police dogs here, according to Hobbs.
They who?
No idea. A most ill-favored place.
Case has no idea where they are. Bournemouth Pool?
He turns off the gravel onto actual dirt, no more than a rutted path, splashing through brown puddles. She sees small trailers parked between woods and the fenced compound, perhaps seven of them, as deserted-looking as the brick structures next to that, but clearly not a part of it.
This is where he lives?
Yes.
What is it?
Gypsy families. These are their caravans. Hobbs rents one.
Have you seen them? Gypsies?
No, he says, bringing the car to a halt. Never.
She looks out at a large rectangular sign, peeling plywood up on two lengths of galvanized pipe, lettered black on white. Ministry of Defense. This is a prohibited place within the meaning of the Official Secrets Act. Unauthorized persons entering the area may be arrested and prosecuted.